accession number 16695, Dr. Yakubovich, reel 1, followed after a pause by reel 2. Informants mic only, left channel contains informants mic only, right channel informant and interviewer mixed.
Yakubovich, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Uzhhorod. U-Z-H-O-R-O-D. And the Z has a little accent on it.
Is this
is Czechoslovakia. It's the easternmost part of Czechoslovakia. And now it is part of the Ukraine. Because after the Second World War, the Soviet Union acquired that county, which was in Czech Podkarpatska Rus, under Carpathian Ukraine, effectively. And it's now Uzhgorod, and it's in the Ukraine. It's one of the second largest cities in the Ukraine after Kiev, I believe, and it's a district capital.
I think the area is called Ruthenia?
Ruthenia is another name for it.
Which year were you born?
1928.
Can you tell me about your family background, what your father did for a living and so on, please?
My father was a medical practitioner, originally in Uzhhorod, and we then moved in 1934 to Prague, and he continued in medical practice. He came from a very large family of my grandfather's 11 children. We were a fairly close-knit family, resident mainly in what you call Ruthenia, but also in Hungary, and of course, father and I in Prague, and another uncle in the United States.
Did you have a religious or a non-religious upbringing?
My grandfather was entirely Orthodox, and he insisted on my father providing me with religious education. In fact, I had a religious tutor, both in Uzhhorod and in Prague, but I must admit I wasn't awfully diligent, and father certainly wasn't Orthodox, although we were supposed to keep kosher and similar Jewish precepts.
Before the war, what are your memories of relations between the different groups in Ruthenia?
Well, I left Ruthenia when I was under 6 years old, and I only remember childhood memories of playing games and generally making a nuisance of myself. In Prague, of course, where I grew up from the age of 6 up to the war, in the schooling that I had, I never found any hostile reactions towards me. Anti-Semitism wasn't prevalent in Bohemia, although I understand it was much more so in Slovakia, which really was the major county embracing Ruthenia as well. I don't know whether there's anything to add. We have had great personal freedom. There was liberty to do almost anything one wanted. One never felt restricted or oppressed. Schooling was very enjoyable, and the vast majority of my friends were hardly aware of each other's religious background, if at all. We were just pretty happy youngsters, provided, of course, we came from reasonably affluent families. There was quite a lot of poverty about, like in any major city.
What kind of schools did you go to pre-war?
I started in a private school, but due to a singular incident, which had to do with the regulations of the school, which made me ill, but we don't need to go into that. It was really because they insisted that whatever was served must be eaten, and I felt fell violently sick when I was given some food. Father took me out of the private school, and from then on, I was in the normal schools, one would call them citizen schools, in central Prague. The private school was just outside Prague.
What was your address in Prague? Can you remember?
Yes. We started by living in Hotel AXA, where Father rented one of the floors complete, which acted as his home, as well as the surgery and the reception area. And Hotel AXA still exists. In fact, I visited it. It hasn't changed a great deal. The swimming pool in the basement is still there, where I learned my swimming originally. It's in a street called Naporici, N-A, the second word, P-O-R-I-C-I, and the R is a little accent on it, and it's pronounced Naporici. After that, after about 4 years, we moved to another house about half a mile away, which is a private residence. I don't remember the address. I found the place when our last visit at Prague. And that's where we finished our abode in Bohemia until the war intervened.
Now, can we go on to the Munich crisis and the outbreak of war, the occupation of Prague, and can you take me through your own personal reminiscences of what happened to you and your family, please?
Just before the Munich crisis, from memory, my father had to rejoin the army. He was a captain in the medical corps, and obviously I was left behind, and he went off to the army in the autumn of 1938. After things settled down a little and the immediate crisis blew over, he was occupied by the fact that our parental, grandparental home in Ruthenia was divided as a result of Munich in a most unfortunate manner, namely the vineyard and fields that my grandfather owned became part of Hungary, and his farmhouse and residence remained in Czechoslovakia. That was just the Munich agreed boundary between Hungary and Czechoslovakia. And this completely upset my grandfather to the extent that he suffered a heart attack. It, as you can imagine, in the autumn, the vineyard was ripe, and he was getting ready for the wine harvest and all that goes with it, instead of which he saw Hungarian troops completely ruining his crop and acquiring the results of his labors. In fact, effectively, it killed him. Grandfather arrived, and by the time Father arrived to visit him, grandfather was on his deathbed, and that really was a most traumatic experience as a child. We were all closely attached to grandfather, all of my cousins and aunts and uncles, primarily because he was a very patriarchal figure and highly respected, even though his education and academic standards of the times were very low indeed. He started as a self-made man and went on from there to educate his 11 children. So that was the immediate aftermath of Munich. Then in March 1939, of course, the German army eventually marched into occupied Czechoslovakia and create the so-called protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia. This was on the 15th of March, but by then, we knew what was coming, and Father secreted me with an Aryan, in other words, Christian family, about 25 miles from Prague in a place called Klanovice, K-L-A-N-O-V-I-C-E. And this was a patient of his who took me under their wing. And on the 29th or 30th of March, Father actually escaped from Czechoslovakia by taking a train through Germany, Belgium and Holland, and eventually arriving in England in April 39, leaving me in the care of this particular family in Carmelita. I did not see the arrival of the German troops in Prague, because by then I was resident with these friends.
How were you treated by the family?
Oh, extremely well. In fact, it was largely thanks to them that I was able to attend high school, what we call it Gymnasium in Czechoslovakia, in Prague, and I travelled daily by train for the first year and a half about from Klavice to Prague to a high school, to the Gymnasium, until I think it was in 1940 that an edict came out to say that no Jewish children were allowed to attend secondary education, or maybe any educational establishments that weren't designated just for the Jewish population. After that, from that date on, I was a virtual prisoner in the grounds and house of these friends of ours, and they were put under tremendous pressure by the local SA, which is not the SS, but the sort of civilian red shirts, or yellow, brown shirts, I think they call them, brown shirts, who wanted the family to get rid of me because I was polluting the Aryan image of Klavice, the little township.
So you hadn't assumed a false identity?
No, they knew about me, and luckily the husband of the lady who looked after me, the lady being father's ex-patient, the husband was a very senior official of the Czechoslovak Railways, and he had a little bit of influence, even though it was now under German governance. And for over a year, they managed to keep me in Klavice in spite of this. Eventually, the local SA commander gave them an ultimatum that if they don't get rid of me, all of us will be expropriated. So, at the end of 1940, early 41, I was moved to the orphanage in Prague. The orphanage was in a street called Belgická, which means Belgian, and the building still exists there. Again, I went to see it when I was visiting Prague recently. And I stayed on at that orphanage from late 40 or early 41 until the transfer to Terezín.
What were conditions like in the orphanage?
Well, in the orphanage, one of the big advantages was that we started receiving education again. It didn't have to be furtive in any way. There wasn't any interference by the Czech or German authorities, provided we kept a reasonably low profile and carried our Star of David attached to our outermost garment. No real problems arose. In fact, at that time I was aged about 12 or 13, and it was quite enjoyable. The comradeship, the fun young children have, we didn't lack food or clothing, or indeed reasonable care. Obviously none of us had any parents within communicating distance, but I was able to communicate with my father indirectly through my uncle in America, to whom I wrote copious letters, who lived in New York, in Queens district of New York City, and who then passed on the message to my father in England, and presumably this would have helped keeping us in touch. Of course, America, the United States, was not in the war then, and hence we were able to communicate.
Any anecdotes from your life in the orphanage?
Yes. For instance, I suspect It was my first falling in love with a lovely young girl. At least I thought she was lovely. She was about 14, I guess. And we did various plays and sing songs and so on. And she was quite a reasonably capable a young actress. And of course, I quite idolized her. The other anecdotal bits were concerned mainly with playing games and generally enjoying ourselves. Certainly, we weren't going very far away from Belgica, because there was always a risk of being picked up because of our yellow star and ill-handled by some lout, of whom there seemed to be plenty about in Central Prague.
Were you taking any interest in the course of the war?
Not really. It seemed not to affect us, and other than missing the family life, it didn't seem to impinge us a great deal. The little bits of news that we were interested in were very, very parochial and not at all global in any sense. Whether the French front was holding out, or whether England was being bombed, or whether the fighter pilots were doing well, all that seemed to bypass us. We hardly, of course, there was no actual war in Bohemia. Hardly ever did we see a warplane about, and then it must have been a training flight. And in fact, there weren't too many troops about, although there was quite an army presence. But presumably, as everything seemed peaceful in the town, they kept to themselves in barracks and only did what the occupying forces felt was necessary.
What kind of people were in charge in the orphanage?
Oh, they were all Jewish adults who had had previous dealings in some sort of form or another with youth movements. They were, in fact, qualified to handle the young and look after them.
And were you properly fed, clothed, and heated?
No problem with heating, clothing, feeding, or virtually anything. There was, of course, the fact that it was an institution where you had to obey certain rules, and there were dormitories rather than private bedrooms, and your personal possessions were of a limited nature, just a few things. But it didn't seem to affect us. Presumably because we were young and pretty flexible and resilient.
And you were able to continue educationally?
I certainly was able to do certain studies. We were taught, but it wasn't on a regular school-going basis. It was merely odd subjects at odd times, and there wasn't terminal examination or anything like that. On the other hand, in the first year of the war, while I was attending gymnasium in Prague, there was absolutely formal classical education with all the subjects that you do in the first year of it. I suppose in England it would be grammar school with examinations and grades and results and the various pressures and so on.
How and when did your period at the orphanage come to an end?
I think it must have been in September 1941 that I was notified that I'm due to go by transport to Terezin, which we knew was a ghetto entirely peopled by Jewish deportees from Bohemia and Moravia. I think my transport designation was capital B, little F. All the transports had letters of the alphabet, starting, I think, with AA, and I don't know where it finished. But mine, I think, was capital B, little F. And this must have been early in September 1941. We assembled in the normal assembly area for the deportation, boarded the train with our meager possessions, a suitcase or two, and were transported into Terezin, walking the last mile or two into the ex-garrison town that was built, I think, in the 18th century by Maria Theresa as one of the defense posts on the northern Bohemian border.
How did you settle down there?
Well, again, perhaps because we came from the orphanage, and certainly because we didn't have any parents with us, and were children on our own. I was then 13 years old. We were taken to a block which was entirely for children, and this block is now post-war and post-communist regime converted into the Museum of Terezin. Actually, the block in which we resided in Terezin has become quite a centerpiece. Of course, when I arrived, it was merely a children's home for male children with about 9 different rooms, and there we were segregated in age groups. I was in room number 5, and there were about 30 odd per room. Room number 1 and room number 5 were the eldest, about 13, between the ages of 12 and 14, I suspect. And the other rooms were younger children. I remember, for instance, Felix Weinberg's brother, younger brother, who at that time would be about 9 years old, he was in one of the rooms, and I remember him from there. Another friend in the room in which I was, room 5, also had a younger brother in the same room. So it was strictly segregated by age, and we each had a bed in triple tier
bunks?
Bunks, that's right. Triple tier bunks. There were 4 triple tiers of 3 and 3 triple tiers of 6. By 6, I mean 2 over 2 over 2. I was in a singular tier, triple tier at the bottom, as it happens. And as an aside, it might just interest you that of our 30 odd that went through that room, we were exceptionally lucky, because about a dozen survived the war, in spite of nearly all of us having to go through Auschwitz, which I think was a ratio quite exceptional. And of the dozen, there are still about 8 or 9 alive now. Many of them in Israel, some in Germany, one or two elsewhere, including the United States, and a couple in the United Kingdom, of whom I am one. So that was room number 5 in the youth home in Terezin, where I spent the next about 3 years. From September 41 till May 44. Yes, nearly 3 years.
Was life uneventful, or?
No, life there was extremely eventful. First of all, you couldn't avoid knowing what was going around outside your youth home. And there was a lot of misery and deprivation, because in all the other barracks, incidentally, virtually all the other habitations were converted barracks from the time of Maria Theresa. And everybody lived in these barracks in large, generally large rooms with triple bunk beds. Families mixed together, young and old, not very pleasant conditions at all. Moreover, food was very short. We weren't quite, I think, on starvation diet, but there wasn't much to spare. And facilities were very miserable. What we didn't do for ourselves just was not done. There were no services laid on other than the things that we could do ourselves. Medical facilities were extremely limited, including, anecdotally, affecting me specifically because I had very bad stomach illnesses, and in particular jaundice. Many of the other children also had various afflictions during the years there. And in addition to the conditions of living, there was a lot of other things going on. One of the few light reliefs that in our youth home we managed to organize were football matches on the ramparts of the Terezin. Terezin, not castle,
Terezin. Fortress.
Fortress, that's right. On the ramparts of the fortress, the rooms played football against each other, and that was an amusing part. Another lighter, but dangerous amusement was the fact that we used to go out under guard to an agrarian plot where vegetables were grown, and we worked from the youth home. A lot of us went to work on this patch of horticulture, and whilst it was a change from our prison-like life, it did mean also the risk of being caught when we tried to smuggle the odd potato or turnip back in the evening, back into our home. We weren't exactly searched as we went through the gates, but at any time there could have been trouble had they discovered that we were smuggling some foodstuffs in.
Did you manage to get much in?
We certainly, whenever we worked, we came back with a couple of turnips and a couple of potatoes each in our trouser pockets or hidden under our shirt or some other way. Because these were very useful additions to our diet, because the grade of food, normal grade of food, was pretty miserable. And as for balanced dietary requirements, well, they're just non-existent. Not that we were very conscious of it, remembering that we were only 13 or 14 years old. We didn't really appreciate how much possible damage this might have been doing to us by not having anywhere near a balanced diet, quite apart from the taste of it being pretty miserable. Other than that, the other excitements were, of course, our odd notions of what was going on in the outside world. We were getting slightly older, and because we were in a fortress, completely isolated from the outside world now, unlike in Prague, where we could still talk to other people who were not in any way limited in their movement, there we just had to rely on hearsay, either from people who came in as new transports.